Now we're going to do, this is side two. It is broadcast number 604. It's KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California, July the 4th, 1983. And it's Mae Bressel on part two of the broadcast. I brought in a lot of different articles to share with you this evening that I wanted to update. And then next week, I'm going back at length into detail on some of the subjects, the interweaving connections of Colonel Willoughby, Young Americans for Freedom, Richard Nixon, Senator Joe McCarthy, and people whose names are in the news now, and particularly going into the Johnny Carson, John DeLorean connections, because that is a story I could do four consecutive weeks right now, but we'll do a lot of that next week, and I'll give you some hints on some of the parts that I'm going to be talking about. We Magazine has a story this week, this month, Who Put RFK on Ice? And this is an interesting article by Philip McLunson, M-E-L, not Mac, it's M-E-L-U-N-S-O-N, the interesting chairman of the political science department at Southwestern Massachusetts in the university there. He's head of the political science department. Ray Fabrizio, of course, at MPC, has been writing articles and co-taught two semesters with me on the political assassination. We were the first accredited course on American assassinations in the United States. Here's a head of the political science department in Massachusetts. 15 years, this is in essence some of the points he makes in this story. 15 years after the murder of Robert Kennedy, there are still questions that haven't been asked. Now, many of you have studied the Robert Kennedy assassinations, or you have my tapes on those past broadcasts, so you're familiar with a lot of the evidence, and some of it is new to new listeners. He talks about the fact that there was a big investigation when Lee Harvey Oswald was charged with killing John Kennedy. That still isn't closed, but the Robert Kennedy assassination was unimportant to the powers that be. It was a presidential candidate. It wasn't even considered a federal crime. Imagine us living with Richard Nixon and the war that cost the $1 million a minute and all the things that napalm had happened, but the man he ran against was killed. That's not a federal crime. It wasn't considered that. So the Los Angeles Police Department did their own investigation, and this is the article. It says that over 600 pages of FBI documents on the RFK case remain classified. Maybe if we opened those up, we'd find out why there's so much apathy in this country. Maybe that would make the young people wake up to say, hey, this candidate was murdered. How was he killed? He was working with the farm workers, working with the blacks. He was trying to arrest members of the syndicate. He locked up Jimmy Hoffa. Tell us more about Robert Kennedy. So far, 600 pages are locked up. And this professor of political science says that the position, he goes into the position of where Sirhan was, how far he was in front of Robert Kennedy, and how the autopsy report of Thomas Noguchi was praised for the great autopsy, but the autopsy showed that bullet 1 inch from the back of the head. And the article has a picture of Noguchi there, and it tells about the man, security guard, Mr. Caesar from Lockheed Aircraft, who was behind Robert Kennedy, who said he sold his .22 gun earlier, but actually unloaded it after Robert Kennedy was murdered. He lied about it. He said he shot in self-defense, but his bullets didn't get into anybody. They went into the back of the armpits of Robert Kennedy, and it tells about Kennedy's gun had 8 rounds and 7 bullets were recovered, but there were the eighth bullet was found in the ceiling, and there were indications no fewer than 5 extra holes in the door frame. And I do have pictures, if you want them, I can photocopy them for you, that show the policeman looking at the bullet holes in the door frame, so that there were guns, again, like I say, with silencers. You can get this article. It's a We Magazine article, and it tells about Sirhan was not alone. He was with that famous woman in the polka dot dress. He was with her before. He was in the pantry. He said, what time does Senator Kennedy come through here? He doesn't say, will he come through here? He knew where he would come. It tells about the company he came with and the evidence of the conspiracy. Now, that seems 15 years ago and a long time ago, but remember, you're still living with the effect of Richard Nixon and the Supreme Court decisions and the dope dealers that he gave more power to. So that case should be opened up for all time, and Martin Luther King's case, so that the blacks can say, yes, you killed him, and next time we have somebody speaking for us, we want a better autopsy, and don't select our leaders, and certainly the Justice Department and the FBI director have no right to tell the blacks in memos who should be their leaders and who they want to get rid of. So there's a lot of homework to be done, and it bears repetition sometimes to talk about these things. And again, it's a whole new generation. They say a generation used to be every 25 years. Now it's every 10 years. So there's movies on the Nazis on television about the blood tests and the genetic selections of people. There's movies on the Rosenbergs and Joe McCarthy. And these articles are new to a whole new generation buying We magazine. They're old hat to a lot of us. We've studied every detail of the case for 15 years, but if any new person comes along and gets involved, it will be a major contribution to this country. There's just a small article today in the paper, but I think it had a certain amount of significance about arrest in Europe. Italy sends a princess to prison. This is out of Rome. Princess Ira Furstenberg, Furstenberg, and that's not the clothes designer. This is Ira Furstenberg, a former Italian film actress. She was an actress, but not just an actress, is going to jail in Italy for 8 months for illegally transferring money out of Italy. The joke is that she transferred $700. She's probably taken $700 million out in her lifetime, like Lucio Gelli with his $22 billion. But they caught her with a token amount, but it had to be a big, big case because you don't send her into jail for $700. This was the interesting part of the story. The princess, besides being a movie star at 42 years old, is the daughter of German Prince Tassilo von Furstenberg, T-A-S-S-I-L-O, von Furstenberg, just as it sounds. She's the daughter of a German prince, and her mother is Clara Agnelli, A-G-N-E-L-L-I, a sister of the Fiat chairman Gianni Agnelli, G-I-A-N-N-I Agnelli, A-G-N-E-L-I. Agnelli not only is the Fiat chairman, he ran Permandex, he ran Murder Incorporated, again involved with the Borghese, with Clay Shaw, Mr. Bloomfield up in Canada, and with Gordon Novell. Agnelli was part of Murder Incorporated, and he works with Lucio Gelli and the Mussolini's gang and Hitler's group. She has a very important brother, but what I didn't know was that the chairman of Fiat, Mr. Gianni Agnelli, had a German prince for a father. I thought that was interesting, because when you follow the Habsburgs and the Thundentasis and the monarchies and the black princes in Italy and the Borghese's, they're behind so much that is happening today, and people discount it. It says she was discovered by Dino De Laurentiis and made some movies. Another interesting thing, she was married and divorced from Austrian-Hungarian prince Alfonso Hohenlohe, H-O-H-E-N-L-O-H-E. Oh, the whole family was behind Adolf Hitler and the banks and the scandals of the past 40, 50 years. And she also was married to a Brazilian industrialist, Francisco Pignatari. So this little cookie is a pretty important person with sister of Fiat chairman, Permandex, Gianni Agnelli, the daughter of a German prince, married to one of the Hohenlohes and a Brazilian industrialist. Well, you don't believe that they sent that person for $700 to jail. I mean, that's the biggest joke, but for whatever it is, I mean, Carlos Marcello is in jail now, and so is Santos Trafficante in America. But just for $700, it's a tap on the wrist. But it is pretty funny that the monarchies are going to jail in Italy and that the drug money is drawing up. I can't even imagine they got away with that. It's so horrendous you could do an hour on that. And the family connection. So when they start sending them, that's like sending David Rockefeller to jail for sending $700 to Venezuela. The whole thing has more behind it, but it's pretty hilarious, and it has a lot of drama. And the family connections are revealed on these simple little arrest charges. You get a different view. Now, there's one subject I'm not going to get too much on, but I brought some articles in, and that's Ronald Reagan's briefing of the debate running for president. It was very important that he appear knowledgeable on everything. He couldn't be asked a question along with Jimmy Carter and given an answer such as, I'm not familiar with it because I haven't been in Washington. But with the right assistance, I'll be able to handle with the best advisors of the world. We'll have this solved. No, he has to get 100 pages. The news this evening, and I listened to the car radio, is that Richard Allen said that somebody in the Carter camp threw it over to him. He, you know, just threw it out at him. A lot of stories. Regan better seize the Briefengate initiative. Instead of Watergate, it's a briefcase. That's by William Sapphire on the penetration of the Carter camp. There was another story. One probe ends in Carter book furor. Ronald Reagan is at his ranch this week, and Fred Fielding, the attorney at the White House, said, "We're not going to investigate this anymore. The president has dropped his inquiry." This is like Richard Nixon saying to John Dean, "We're going to go to the ends of the world on Watergate." Then he says, "Well, we'll let the Justice Department do it." The man who represents him in this office is that crook, Fred Fielding. Fred Fielding sends the day the White House has dropped his inquiry. Luckily, the United Press even carried the notice in case people don't remember very much. It said Fielding was a deputy White House counsel with John Dean during the Watergate scandal and was the liaison between the Justice, he's the liaison now between the Justice Department and the Reagan administration. They're as much as saying you better take another look at Fred Fielding. This is what he was doing at the time of Watergate. In case you don't remember it, they're reminding you of his role with John Dean and Richard Nixon. So he's saying we'll keep the president briefed, and by next week you'll have more on this. I don't know who will be sacrificed. Well, it'll be William Casey or whatever, or Richard Allen's already been kicked out for his little payoff under the desk with Nancy and his Japanese photographer. He's doing other damage at Stanford University and is a lobbyist for Japan. Ronald Reagan there's a long article about in the Washington Post. Reagan calls the book Much to Do About Nothing. Of course it's nothing. You know, they're going to ask him questions on what he would do if he was president, and he has stolen from the past president the information on certain situations. And Mr. Stockman, he's the minister from Harvard. He graduated as a minister who runs our Office of Management Budget and the Finances and publishes articles that the economic situation is a farce, and he's still on the cabinet. He briefs Reagan. Now, you're to say this and you're to say that, and he takes over the role of Cecil DeMille, coaching him. Can you visualize it? This is what you're going to say, and this is how you're going to rebut it, and this is what Carter's going to say. And there have been many articles, and maybe you've seen them, on how he's to rebut the questions with statistics and facts. And when Carter says in California the taxes went up and you had certain economic problems, then Reagan can answer they weren't as high as they were in Georgia when you were governor. So he's briefed by his aide, Mr. Deaver, and Mr. Stockman. And, of course, the report continues. The FBI will investigate the filched papers. They call them the filched, the stolen papers. And various members of the cabinet are going into how much was pilfered and how much came out of Jimmy Carter's desk. Again, the privacy of the president and a man wanting to run for president and taking a book of work that he's done and studied so that you know what he's going to say so you can answer it. That's Ronald Reagan. I mean, I just can't believe that this is business as usual. That's Richard Nixon. It's Ronald Reagan, and it's what the American people deserve if they don't get out and vote or split the vote. I mentioned before that's really kind of, I'm getting pretty hard about it, but I guess that's what they have to deserve. Well, I mentioned a few minutes ago a story by Jody Powell. He was press secretary to Jimmy Carter on this great book of Seymour Hersh. I haven't read it yet. I got La Popessa, and I'll talk about that for a few minutes. And there's so many good books out, and I haven't gotten the Seymour Hersh book, but he makes a certain point here, Jody Powell, about the era. This is the era of Richard Nixon and his administration, and it certainly sets the tone for Ronald Reagan because the same people put them into office. Kissinger tales, if true, Jody Powell says, they may be an aberration, but they must not recur. And he tells about how Washington, D.C. is taking sides on the book on Henry Kissinger. He says it's not halfway true or halfway right. He says it's a controversial. It's like abortion or nuclear freeze. There's no middle ground. You either agree after you read the 600 pages that Kissinger is a slimy rat, or you believe that Seymour Hersh has some axe to grind, but it's not either way. This is what Jody Powell says. Henry Kissinger says that one of these stories is a slimy lie. Former State Department spokesman Hodding Carter III said that Seymour Hersh someday should be honored by history and colleagues for exposing Kissinger and his prince, Richard M. Nixon. And I believe personally that Kissinger is way overblown and that what happened, this aberration in Washington, is Nazi Fritz Kramer behind Henry Kissinger and Alexander Haig, changing the whole tone of America. That's why I talk so much about Fritz Kramer and the importance of smoking him out, because this is what they've done to this country, and now the pieces of the raw meat are out on the table for you to look at. The name Seymour Hersh, he says, became an almost household word in 1969 with his embarrassingly painful story of America's military history when he described the My Lai massacre. Over the next 12 years, he won prizes for his story on the CIA in Chile, for CIA and domestic spying, for the involvement of former intelligence agents illegally sending arms to Libya. The Price of Power, his new book, continues in that tradition of investigative reporting, and it is distressing. And he mentions several points, Jody Powell does, and maybe you've read some book reviews of it, but he mentions some very salient points that bring out the Richard Nixon, Fritz Kramer, Alexander Haig, Henry Kissinger era. One, he talks about Kissinger betraying Lyndon Johnson and Siron Vance and his other friends in high places while he passed secret information from the Paris peace talks to the Nixon camp, at the same time offering derogatory material on Richard Nixon to Hubert Humphrey, the Democratic candidate. To endear himself to the Democrat, he talked tales about Richard Nixon. To help Richard Nixon, he stole from Lyndon Johnson so Nixon would be knowledgeable about the war, which is like Ronald Reagan stealing from the Carter camp so he's knowledgeable at the time of the elections. Two, he said Kissinger as national security advisor undermines the Middle East proposals of Secretary of State William Rogers that he wants to be on top. Three, Kissinger's own peace efforts in Vietnam were being undercut by the president, by Nixon, who he served, and by the Secretary of State, Alexander Haig, who is his protege. When Kissinger wants to do something, Nixon and Haig betray him, and this is a heavily documented book. The next point, he says, Kissinger is spying on his own aides and colleagues, which he set the wiretap phones on, and he in turn is spied on by an agent working for the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff. That's Yeoman Redford, who was spying on Henry Kissinger and giving information to Admiral Moore, who's on the board of Western Goals with Larry McDonald from Georgia, filling information, again, spying on us into the Los Angeles Police Department. I bring this up because these characters are involved in collecting data and information on us into secret computers and will not answer questions at the investigations in Los Angeles. They're still at it. That's the point. Jody Powell thinks it's an aberration, but you better be careful if they're still at it. He says Kissinger is the consummate manipulator of the media, protected and promoted by a coterie of journalists whose loyalty was rewarded by juicy bits of information, and that's just for openers in the book, he says. Now, I think that Kissinger and Haig are so overblown, these characters, and you know I have, any of you heard me for the last 12 years, I began with the story of the Pentagon Papers. I think that they are disgusting. Roy Cohn, Kissinger, Alexander Haig, their social life and everything they do. He says he's the consummate manipulator of the media, and he is. Every time there's something in Iran where the hostages come home or a plane blows up or there's a spy ship outside of Sweden, Henry Kissinger's on Good Morning America, Today Show, as if he's the elder statesman. He's the elder slime, and they continue calling Henry Kissinger every time there's a crisis. This book, according to Jody Powell, has 698 pages, and you don't have to be willing to accept every allegation it contains for it to be worth reading. Ideally, keep Kissinger's own 1,500-page memoir, The White House Years, close to you to contrast the interpretations of history. I confess to being less than halfway through the process myself, Jody Powell said, and I already say with confidence that the experience is chilling. Whether you end up believing Kissinger is always telling the truth and his detractors are congenital liars or vice versa or somewhere in between, it will turn your stomach and it will chill your heart. If he's one fraction of the crud that Seymour Hersh has documented, it will turn your stomach and it will chill your heart. And that, again, is a direct quote. And that's why I say that Fritz Kramer and Carl Weidenbach, alias Charles Willoughby, and the people that betrayed this country should be laid out and dissected. At least, Jody Powell says, I hope that it will. because the most frightening reaction I can imagine is a shrug, your disinterest. What the hell? That's the way things are. Dismiss it as sordid business. He says, that would be the worst thing of all. At the risk of sounding unbearably self-righteous, and I say this is not the way things are done in most administrations, Democratic or Republican, no one who ever served any president can honestly claim that he never did that which he ought not to have done. We've all done this in a few battles and turfs. But here we have something else, a difference in degree, perhaps, but more than sufficient to qualify as a difference in kind. And that's where I say when Reinhard Gehlen came over and the Nazis took over the OSS and the National Security Council and put in the Kissingers and the Hagues and the Brzezinskis and now William Clark, that's when the essence of America went out the window. What we have here is something different than just mistakes or covering up or stealing on each other. He says, this is not one of those situations in which responsible people can differ, in which differences and perspectives lead to honest difference of opinion. Who is ever telling the truth, the picture that emerges in this book is one of personal and professional relationships that make Byzantium look like the Waltons. The most rudimentary basis for normal human intercourse have been discarded. No one said what he meant or meant what he said. Loyalty and friendship, not to mention affection and trust, must have perished early on. They perished when Kissinger got $10,000 a year. He was at Omer Amigau with Mr. Piper and Dietrich and Skorzenyk and Klaus Barbie interrogating him and Fritz Kramer. That's where it all went out, with Walter Rauf, with Joseph Mengele, with Martin Bormann, when he sat in a castle and got a chauffeur, and then John McCloy and Fritz Kramer put him at Harvard to become the numero uno spy. That's where it all went out. The normal human intercourse was discarded. And Jody Powell, if he doesn't know his history, I'll send him a tape on the fact. No one meant what they said, loyalty and friendship. He says, not to mention affection and trust perished. When the war was over, it was dog eat dog, we'll fight Russia. The Nazis are fine, we'll lie to the American people, we'll lie who are the criminals, we'll release Otto Skorzeny, we'll put the Bormann money in Spain, we'll put it in Madrid, we'll get rid of Evita Perón and her lousy brother, we'll fund the network, we'll deal cocaine, we'll have death squads. That's when the loyalties went out. And if Jody Powell doesn't know it, as I say, I'll send him this history. He says ambition and the means to it and the satisfactions were constrained, at least in any reasonable sense of the word, and those in the position of power and leadership. That's Richard Nixon, Henry Kissinger, Alexander Haig, particularly because of the media freaks. Those in the position of power and leadership treated each other worse than they did the rest of the country. The real enemy list of the Nixon administration was and apparently still is composed of his colleagues. And that's what I've said all along. If Martha Mitchell gets a needle in her butt and gets this treacherous cancer 3 years later and is never seen, not allowed to be seen by her daughter until and after her death, and the attorney general has separated her, only the daughter that she's close to or her children, from her till she has this three-year terminal cancer, the Jack Ruby type of cancer, I've said long ago, when they do it to themselves, be careful what they'll do to us. If they blow up a Dorothy Hunt plane crash or threaten to kill James McCord and Herbert Kalmax, the attorney for United Airlines, and they send Alex Butterfield to Federal Aviation to investigate it and Mr. Chapin out to Chicago to cover the investigation, when they're blowing up their own and you're sitting on their plane, heaven help you. That's the company you keep when you keep those kind of people in office. Or Murray Chotiner, the guy that discovered Richard Nixon, and Earl Warren, who walks out of his house on a Sunday and is gunned down by driven over by a government truck, or the major Watergate witnesses were off. Well, Jody Powell concludes that he says Seymour Hersh is less confident that the chance of avoiding a recurrence will happen, but there's a lesson here to be gleaned from this book, and Hersh is reluctant to say it. The only thing worse here to conclude that this is the way things are going to be decided and that they would never be this way again, that you better make up your minds that it can happen again. And the proof that's happening again, and I don't know if Jody Powell knows about Mitchell Ward Bell and Mr. Larry McDonald with Roy Cohn and Admiral Moore and the top military and their computers in Los Angeles, and they're working with Reverend Gale and the Nazis and the Minutemen and the Klan, and they're deceiving us, and they lie in the media that there's no such organizations, and Moore is working with them. More that can happen and worse can happen, but the point is, in order to get their power, they claw at each other. They tear each other apart. And what this review of the book is saying, how brutal they are to each other. And again, I'm saying, when they do it to each other, I'm not satisfied that it was to them and not us. It was to all of us. And what they did is what they do, because they never went to jail for what they did. So they continue being out. Now, we have about 2 minutes, so real fast, I'll just talk. I won't discuss much on this subject, but this is a marvelous book called La Popessa by Warner Books, and I'll go into it maybe in 3 weeks from now. Next week, I want to go into Johnny Carson and John DeLorean and the cocaine connections. That is a fascinating tale I'm unraveling in more details for you. But in the meantime, get La Popessa. This is the blurb that goes with the book, to whet your appetite. March the 2nd, 1939, Pope Pius XII became the new pope. And into the Vatican comes a Popessa. That was P-O-P-E-S-S-A. A nun, Sister Pasolina, P-A-S-C-A-L-I-N-A, who had secret and unprecedented powers. She lived in the papal quarters, right with the pope, and the cardinals let her there. They hated her. And the minute Pope Pius XII died, and he was the fellow who worked with Adolf Hitler and Mussolini, she was given her birds and a cage, and she was put in somewhat of a nunnery with the help of Cardinal Spellman. It tells about, in this book, some descriptions. In 1918, Pacelli, he was not yet pope, he was stationed in Munich and in Berlin. Cardinal Pacelli handed church cash to a young Adolf Hitler. His hope to thwart communism and the Vatican was putting money eyeball to eyeball, soon to be pope, with young Adolf Hitler. This book tells Pacelli engineering the Lateran Treaty in 1929 between the Vatican and Mussolini, where the Italian government gave $100 million to the Vatican in exchange to approving the appointment of priests in the country and other political decisions. The role of Pacelli in the appointment of an independent financial advisor, a Jewish banker named Nogara, N-O-G-A-R-A, who invested his fortune in armaments of the Allied and the Axis nations and pharmaceutical concerns such as birth control for the Vatican, making money off of birth control. So getting back to where I started with the book in the Soviet Union about the Jews working with Adolf Hitler, it's also listed in this book. You don't have to see it in the Soviet Union. You can get it from Warner Book. Well, now we're out of time. It's just about 20 seconds until World Watches is over, so we have to fold up and continue with 100 of the best stories next week, and maybe get 5 or 6. In the meanwhile, do your homework, read your papers, your newspapers, and your books, and study these things, and I'll be back with you next week. This is Mae Brussel in Pacific Grove, California, KAZU FM.